Welcome, everybody, to the Mesa City Council Study Session for Monday, September 22nd, 2008. We'll begin. First of all, I'd like to excuse Chris Brady, who's out of town attending a conference, and welcome Ms. Carrie Kent. I'm sure it is. Thank you. We'll begin with the first item on the agenda, which is to review items on the agenda for tonight's City Council meeting. Anything on page one? Page two? Mr. Wesley?
Mayor, you have at your place this evening a revised resolution for major general plan amendment 0801. It's the DMB portion. Just a minor change on page two of that. We recognize the need to clarify, since it's made up of a couple of different property owners, to separate out the DMB and the Maricopa Flood Control and make sure those total numbers for those areas were clear. So that's the only change, just a little clarification.
Okay, thank you. Page three. Page four. Page five. Page six. Ms. Kent.
Mayor, City Council, I'd like to recommend that we continue item 7A, B, C, and D. Staff just has some loose ends to tie up with DMB on these ordinances, and DMB is in agreement that we'll just continue these to the October 6th meeting for introduction and consideration on October 20th.
So that was item 7A, B, C, and D.
Correct.
Any questions or okay? We will continue those items until the October 6th meeting then. Yes, Councilmember Summers.
How does that question, maybe for the city attorney, how does that impact 3 and 4B if we don't, we're looking to change the general plan. Excuse me. We're looking to change the general plan to mixed-use community. Do we have that in the general plan, or is that part of one of these items? Item D, perhaps? Or no, I'm sorry, C?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I believe we are okay going forward with the general plan amendment, but I'll ask John if he has any concerns about that.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, no, I don't. The council has already approved the mixed-use community land use designation in the general plan. This is simply applying it to the property, so it'll be fine.
And the items in item 7 follow the general plan
correct.
Designation. We couldn't do it the reverse, but
that's
we can
correct.
Do it in this order.
Okay, so we're good. That's all I want to know. Thank you.
And this is, once again, the delay on these are just to give more time to tie up some loose ends and things that, and we're not really losing anything by taking some more time to get it done right.
Correct, Mayor.
Okay. Page 8. Page 9. Page 10. Do we have any questions on item 9B?
Bravo.
Bravo. 9 Bravo on page 10. I think when we left it last Thursday, we had sort of left it as is, and the applicant had requested a reintroduction of a ordinance with a change. Not a reintroduction, but an introduction of a revised ordinance, which would cause us to start the tolling period over again, and we were going to decide tonight whether we were going to move forward with as is or whether we needed more discussion on this. You want to discuss it now or do you want to wait later until we get into the meeting?
No.
Councilmember Richens.
Yes. I'm still feeling a little bit level of being uncomfortable. Really, this is a land use decision that we're making here, and I think it's really going to affect our ability to have any kind of comprehensive redevelopment plans for RV parks, RV subdivisions, manufactured home parks, or manufactured home subdivisions. I mean, it's a pretty broad category that we're in here, and we have a lot of these kinds of parks in Mesa that are going to need some kind of redevelopment, whether it's a replacement of the units, because manufactured homes only last so long. And I know our zoning folks have been working on a rewrite of our zoning ordinance and considering these kinds of uses in that as well. And so I just felt really uncomfortable continuing to go forward without really taking a look at what our comprehensive plan is for these types of land uses within Mesa.
So you're talking about, in general, not so much a 1,100 versus 950, but you're saying you're not feeling comfortable right now moving forward on this, that you need a little bit more understanding.
It just seems like I can't articulate it real well, but it just seems like we're going forward too quickly to really understand completely what the ramifications are of these land use decisions as far as these parks.
Any other comments or questions? Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I'm not in agreement with Councilmember Richens. I believe that what we're asking for now makes a lot of sense in a lot of the RV parks that we have in our communities, mostly in my district and in District 6, and that this ordinance will actually just improve the quality of the RV parks we currently have. But if there's somebody, if the applicant's here and we have time, which I think we have time, could we have a little talk about that?
Well, yeah, and I'd like to ask a couple questions. And I think one of the issues we have here is, and it's something that I brought up on Thursday, is we have an application for a special use permit, and I'm still trying to understand how we went from that into, and maybe Mr. Wesley, you can explain, how we went to a zoning ordinance change. So we're really talking about a zoning ordinance change, which will define how we issue special use permits. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yes, Mayor. We've had a couple of requests for some zoning changes to make these kind of modifications because they weren't provided for specifically in the code. And we were seeing enough of these coming down the system that we thought it would maybe be better to just address it fundamentally in the code by changing the zoning ordinance itself to set up a process to allow for these types of transitions to occur. And the proposal that's before you is to allow them through a special use permit process.
So I think one of the things that is a bit confusing is we have an application on a special use permit, which is certainly driven or governed by the change in the ordinance which we're acting upon, but they're really sort of different issues, are they not? Or are they? I'm trying to get the connection and the disconnect between the two.
Okay. Let's see if I can help and see if I'm addressing your question. But we will have two different things. We have this ordinance change that's before you right now to change the zoning ordinance itself. And then for anybody to actually change the use in a given park, they will have to apply for the special use permit. We know we have a couple of applicants just waiting for this to be approved so they can submit such applications. That will be a separate process that will go to the Board of Adjustment for approval.
Vice Mayor.
And as was explained last Thursday, this also shortens the time period, the process, considerably.
Vice Mayor, that compared to rezoning a property, getting a site plan approved and those types of things, it would be a quicker process.
We're
a simpler process.
Going from 6 months to 6 weeks?
3 to 4 months to more like, 4 to 6 weeks? Where's Gordon at there? Yes.
Councilmember Higgins.
Ms. Wesley, but do we also cover in this rezoning the fact that when they come through for a special use permit, that the park then has to show they're making some improvements to it? So we can't just go in and put a new home on a vacant park lot without other improvements to the overall park.
Yes, so Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct. Part of this special use permit process would be a review to see how the RV park or subdivision compares to the requirements for a mobile home park or subdivision. And where they are deficient, they would have to bring some of those things up to the code for the mobile home park to be part of that transition. And it would be phased in over time.
So would it be fair to say then we're actually upgrading our RV parks and RV subdivisions in the city by adopting this?
Yes, we believe that would be the case.
Thank you.
Councilmember Richens?
I mean, if we're doing that, why don't we just change the designation to a manufactured home subdivision or manufactured home park? Because there's four classifications here. There's manufactured home parks, manufactured home subdivisions, RV parks, and RV subdivisions. And if they're going to upgrade, well, let's call them manufactured home subdivisions or manufactured home parks. Instead of, it just seems like we're going halfway and we're not fully committing to it just seems to me that there's an unfairness issue between the setbacks that we are requiring in an RV, in a recreational vehicle park, and a manufactured home park.
Well, both of them.
Both.
And I have the same question that Councilmember Richens does is, as I look at the table here and I start looking at the differences between recreational vehicle park, recreational vehicle subdivision, and the lots, you have different setbacks. It seems like on the RV park, you have three, and we spent a great deal of time last Thursday on the 3 and 3 setbacks, and all the others have 5 and 10 setbacks. And I know we talked a lot about the 950 versus 11, and I was thinking that the 950 versus 11 was purely a marketing issue, but it would seem like also that you have the potential, as Councilmember Richens pointed out, of really getting someone that could basically do an end around some setback requirements and some parking space requirements by putting an 1,100 square foot manufactured home in an RV park that only has 3 foot setbacks. Now, the question is, for long-term purposes, is that what we really want to accomplish, and is that one of these unintended consequences that we're talking about? You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
You actually, I believe that the 5 and 5 setbacks and the 10 foot rear setback was established for a purpose, and primarily to get manufactured homes to a certain size and lifestyle, and the 2-car parking spot, which is specific to manufactured home, both park and subdivision. Now we're allowing that type of structure to move into an RV park, but we're basically allowing them to only have 3 foot setbacks and only requiring 1 parking spot. What are we creating here, I guess, is the question. And is that, have we really thought through the consequence of what we're creating long term? And can you answer that?
I'm trying to figure out where to start, Mayor.
I had that same problem.
let me see if I can try to break down the questions, at least as according to what our analysis has been. What we're dealing with, Mayor and council members, is basically several situations where we have existing conditions. There are several manufactured home parks, several manufactured home subdivisions, several RV parks, several RV subdivisions throughout the entirety of the city. We're not getting new ones, or if we are getting new ones, they're very rare. So in many circumstances, we're dealing with non-conforming conditions for existing properties. Having said that, many of the manufactured home parks...
I apologize. Non-conforming conditions meaning...
Meaning that many of these parks and many of these subdivisions were approved prior to the current standards that you see in the ordinance today.
Okay.
They were approved in the 1960s, the 1970s, and the early
1980s. Both in the county and in the city and whatever, we brought them in, and they don't conform to our current standards.
Exactly. Okay. And so as a result of that, particularly in the late 1980s and the early 1990s, several of these manufactured home parks went through what were referred to as park-wide variance processes, where it was recognized that because of the size of the spaces or the size of the subdivision lots, the wider units that the industry was producing at that particular or beginning to produce at that particular time weren't going to fit if someone wanted to take out an old unit and replace it with a new unit. And so there was an agreement that was made basically with the industry, with the park industry and the subdivision industry, that individuals would come in and go through a zoning administrator hearing officer process for the entirety of the park. And during that time, there were variances that were granted on a park-wide basis that basically reduced the setbacks from what you see in your table to 3 feet on a side. So even though the ordinance actually says they're required to have 5 and 5 on each side, the actual requirement for many of the parks is 3 and 3 on the sides. And the reason that was done was because it was understood that the space sizes weren't going to change, but the units were widening out. And so in order to be able to pull out the old unit and put on a new unit, because these were wider units, there was no other way they were going to fit on unless we had allowed some discrepancy or some deviation from the ordinance to allow the extra 2 to 4 feet on either side. So for the most part, most manufactured home parks already have 3 and 3 on the side. That's kind of that's the reality as opposed to what you see. The ordinance of what you see now is what if someone wanted to come in with a new manufactured home park and build something brand new, they would require to have 10 acres, those space sizes, that density, and the setbacks that are present in the table that you see. Those were the ones that were set up by the ordinance.
For anything new. Councilmember Richens.
So now we're going to add another messy layer onto the messy existing conditions?
Well,
What
we're trying to do is to recognize it's kind of a lifestyle trend as well as a market trend, that many of the folks who choose to live in RV parks, and they call them resorts or subdivisions, are not living there on a transient basis. They're not there on a temporary seasonal basis, as was intent, was the thought process when these were developed. Several of these folks like the lifestyle. They will stay down here for longer periods of time. They may initially been 1 or 2 months when they came down. Eventually that might expand to 6, and then eventually they come down here as a retirement. They already enjoy the folks that they live next to as part of the park or part of the subdivision. They enjoy that particular park lifestyle, the amenities, all that. And so they just choose to live there year-round. And so instead of a transient lifestyle, you have a permanent lifestyle, in essence, in these circumstances. The existing regulations that allow park models with additions and storage allow for 920 square feet of buildable area. And so oftentimes people will put the park model on, they put the addition on the side, they put the storage room, and they have 920 square feet. And what you have is kind of an amalgamation of all of these different floor areas, but not very much flexibility on how you can actually utilize that floor area there. And so what this does, basically, is state law defines a park model as being up to 400 square feet. We don't have the ability to change state law. Anything over 400 square feet is defined as a manufactured home. What this ordinance would do would be allow the folks to take that 920 square feet that they already have and rearrange that in a fashion that makes it a little bit more efficient for them to have the 1 or 2 bedrooms with the great room and the family room, as opposed to 400 square feet for a kitchen and a bedroom and maybe have an Arizona room on the side. And the sizes of those rooms are difficult to try to get. They don't have much flexibility in how they can arrange those. So in essence, it upgrades the flexibility for folks to do that. We don't anticipate that there will be too many parks that will be able to put the larger manufactured homes on these, because the space sizes are going to self-limit these in many cases. And so you're getting, in essence, basically the same land use that's already there. It's changed whether we want to recognize it, that it's changed or not. All that's happening, we believe, with this particular ordinance is that we're substituting what we believe is a higher quality and better built unit for the ones that are allowed now in RV parks.
Is that the part of the reason why we came up with the 950? Was it was close to what the 920 that's existing now? So, and perhaps our discussion went, and the context in which it's been thrown out there, which is a marketing issue, really goes back to more of a land use issue, whereas we say that we can put a park model combination or whatever that adds up to about 920 square feet. What we're saying is if we go with the 950 square foot limitation, that we have a better built unit that approximates what is now allowable under a park unit.
I believe that's a good summary, Mayor, yes.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
I just wanted clarification. What you had said earlier was that what we currently have in manufactured home parks and RV parks, are those the 3 foot and 3 foot?
In many of them. The newer, there are, I believe, 2, maybe 3 newer parks that may not have those, but majority of the older parks already have 3 and 3 on the side.
So that means, so what we're doing if we're we're not allowing that change in RV park, but allowing permanent structures, we're not really changing the advantage of an RV park over a manufactured home park, unless it was a brand new manufactured home park with these new setbacks.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, the one advantage that you will see is there's a density difference. But there's already a density difference. When RV parks allow more units per acre than a manufactured home park does, because the space sizes are different and the allowable number of units per acre is different. It's higher density for RV park, but that's already there. The land use really isn't that much different. There's not that much of a difference in terms of the impact outside of being transient, outside of being permanent, but you size it for the most density anyway. So from our standpoint, it really is a building code change to a certain extent. It's a changeover from a park model unit built to an ANSI standard to a manufactured home that's built under a HUD standard.
I think the question before us, once again, to get back to what's been presented, is that we have an existing ordinance that's been submitted for submittal. I guess that's what you would do, submit it for submittal. That's been submittal. One of the applicants submitted an alternative, which was to amend that to, rather than say an 1,100 square foot maximum size, to have it be a 950 square foot maximum size, which would cause us to, rather than act on the ordinance tonight, which cause us to reintroduce the ordinance for final action on October 6th. Where we left it off, as I recall, was we had left the ordinance intact and had not agreed to substitute that 950. The question going forward is, do we want to act upon the ordinance as is at the 1,100, or do we want to perhaps move forward with the request to make the change and make the amendment?
Mayor, I'd only add to that, if you want to reintroduce, so you want to change this, we will have to agendize it for introduction on the 6th for action on the 20th.
Okay, because we did not introduce it, or we did not post it. Notice it. Councilmember Summers.
What happens to this if we decide to go forward with a vote and it loses? Unlike a zoning case where the applicant would have to start from scratch from day one, wouldn't we just be able to decide that if this loses and come forward in 2 weeks and introduce the other ordinance?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, yes, technically we don't really have an applicant. We've had some citizens that
have interested in
that
question originally.
And so with text amendments, it's really a staff-driven thing. So as long as we are talking about something that we feel has been adequately covered by the Planning and Zoning Board already, we could simply come back to reintroduction. If we start getting off of anything that's been considered by P&Z, we would need to go back through them for their review and recommendation.
So you feel if, given these two situations, would, if this failed in a vote, would we have to go back through P&Z with the other two?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, I don't believe so, because there was some discussion of lot sizes at the P&Z board.
Councilmember Higgins?
And just one question, Mr. Wesley. The 1,100 square feet is your recommendation from staff?
Yes. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, no. Staff had it with no size limit.
Okay, you had no limit.
The 1,100 came from some of the interested parties.
Okay.
And the 950 came from the supposed compromise that was created by one of the applicants in consultation with some members or a group that included some from the manufactured housing industry. I will say, I was probably last Thursday pretty adamant, thinking that the 950 and the 1,100 was merely a marketing difference. But I think after looking at the setbacks and the lot size and everything, I see now where it's more of a land use kind of an issue, and where going to the 950 really could create a land use designation rather than purely a marketing difference. I know that may be the net effect, but it, sure. So I think I've changed my mind a little bit on that. So the sense, yes, Councilmember Higgins.
Can you explain what you just said again?
I don't even know if I understand. Last Thursday, I was feeling like the 950 was an artificial restraint that we as a city would be imposing to create merely a marketing difference, that the RV park would be limited to a manufactured home of 950 square feet, whereas the manufactured home park would have 1,100, and that created simply a difference for marketing purposes. I did that without realizing the differences or how that affected the differences as it related to setbacks. I think that even though the status quo right now is that there are many existing manufactured home parks that live with 3 and 3, it certainly is the intent of the city to go to bigger setbacks and to require 2 spaces. And so I see that if we allow 1,100 square feet, up to 1,100 feet in an RV park, in a way we're sort of going against or contradicting our own, what we're trying to accomplish here with these setbacks. And it's not so much simply a marketing issue, but really if you limit RV parks to 950 square feet, that it somewhat coincides with the existing condition, which is a park model can be up to 920 square feet, mm-hmm. if I'm stating that correctly.
Correct.
And so that there is more than a marketing effect to this, and I feel more comfortable with that kind of thing, because I'm really worried about if we move, I have to say I agree with Councilman Ridgens, if we were to move ahead as is, I don't know what those consequences are long term. I don't know how that plays out, and I don't feel comfortable with that. And I'm not arguing the merits of it, I'm just trying to figure out which ordinance we're going to act on tonight. So, Councilman Ridgens?
If we put these in, are the things that we're going to, these park models or whatever, 950 foot units, are they manufactured homes or are they park models or are they, what are they, how are they classified, both under HUD and ANSI? Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Richards, anything over 400 square feet is a manufactured home.
Okay.
Anything 400 feet or less is are built under the ANSI standards, or the American National Standards Institute standards. That is considered a park model or a recreational vehicle.
Right. So if they put these bigger units in, are they becoming manufactured home parks?
Yes.
And not
that would be
RV
the
parks?
Purpose of the special use permit.
Okay. It just almost seems like if they're going to be a manufactured home park, we have stuff capturing that already, that be a manufactured home park.
Councilmember Higgins, and then we'll decide.
Okay, Ms. Sheffield. So you just said a 400 square foot unit is a manufactured home and a park model.
The units that are less, the 400 square feet or less,
okay,
are the park models.
Okay.
With by,
the
statute.
By
statute.
By statute.
Okay.
Right. Well, yes. The
sure.
It's a little bit more involved, but you're okay, essentially right. The anything over 400 square feet, by definition, is a manufactured home.
So, but on these lots, if we're talking 950 or 1100, we're not talking that the unit they're putting down is 1100 square feet. We're talking the total floor plan, including their shed and their whatever that they decide to build on, is 1100. Isn't that true?
Right. In RV parks, in RV subdivisions, it's 400 square feet for the park model, 400 square feet for the Arizona room, 120 square feet for the shed. In manufactured home subdivisions and manufactured home parks, there are no limits. As soon as they put something, they can put an RV on the property, they can put a manufactured home on the property. As long as they meet the setback requirements and meet the parking requirements, they're good to go.
So this ordinance that we're talking about is still putting a 400 square foot park model plus the 400 square foot Arizona room and a 200 foot shed. We're not talking about putting a 1,000 square foot manufactured home on an RV park lot. Is that what we're talking? That's not what I understood.
No, we would not be doing that.
Right. So we're still talking about putting a park unit, which is four.
They would have that option. They could put the park model or the manufactured home on the RV space.
But we're not talking about putting a 1,000 square foot manufactured home on that space.
The special use permit would authorize that.
You could. So that means that person couldn't build a shed and an Arizona room because they've already met their max of 1,000.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, they'd only be limited by the setback in the building envelope then.
Our understanding of this would be that if 920 square feet or whatever the limit is, if the council decides to impose a limit, is that includes everything. They don't have any, there's no sheds, there's no any of those types of things. It would be the manufactured home and the carport, and that would be it.
Okay, so what really we're looking at is that we're establishing standards for that special use permit.
Correct.
Is what we're doing. We're changing the ordinance that says if you want to come in for a special use permit and you are an RV park who wants to build or allow manufactured homes within your park, here are the standards. And you have your normal setbacks, which are included in the subdivision ordinance. Mm-hmm. You have these other things that we've added here in the proposal, one of which the staff, the thing that's before us right now, which would include 1,000 square foot, 1,000 or 1,100?
1,100
square foot maximum size. That would be one of the standards
placing the manufactured home in the RV park.
Right, to obtaining a special use permit.
They would have to agree to that cap.
They would agree to that cap versus the compromise, which was everything else would stay the same except for that cap. Rather than being 950 square or 1100 square feet, it would be 950 square feet. And then if I walked in and wanted to get a special use permit, these are the rules that I follow. And that's what we're voting on. That's really, as it gets down, what we're voting on the ordinance that tonight. Is that an accurate summary?
Well, yes, Mayor, that you've introduced for tonight an ordinance that has 1,100 square feet. So you're voting that, yes or no. If you want to do something different than that, it will require introduction of what that difference is.
Okay. So the options we have going forward for tonight's agenda, since we have to wrap this up real quickly, is leave it as is and vote on it, on the 1,100 square feet limitation, the ordinance with the 1,100 square feet, or to somehow pull that and work on reintroducing a 950 square foot. What's the sense? Councilmember Summers.
Mayor, I would suggest that we at least move forward from this, given what John has said, if I may call you John here, we can vote this down and still move forward quickly. Plus, I can see 1,000 eyes in the audience. At least a few of them want to speak on this issue, and we may hear something that
and that's
da 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 da.
So if the sense is, let's move ahead with what's on the table right now.
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll leave it as is. All right. Thank you.
That was fun.
That's all right. We needed to go there.
Again?
Sure. Okay. Page 11. Anything else on page 10? Page 11? Okay.
Item 2.
Item 2. Oh, Councilmember Higgins, did you have an item?
I had an item. I'm getting my agendas mixed up because I have notes on both of them. Item 11, I'm sorry, page 11, item 9D.
Yes.
I thought we were discussing whether we wanted to send that back to planning and zoning. Oh, see, that's what happens when I make mistakes.
Okay.
All right, sorry.
So, yeah,
sorry,
the item we are voting on is to, on consent agenda, is to refer it back to P&Z.
Thank
is that okay?
You very much.
All right. Item number 2, hear presentation, discuss, provide direction on proposed plan, community development for Mesa Proving Grounds.
Mayor, Council, I'll make it brief because we're short on time. Didn't have a whole lot of update. Wanted to just briefly cover what it is you got in your packet on Friday and give you a couple of updates and see if Council had any questions from then. Back in August, staff received what was termed at that point the final submittal by DMB for their planned community district for the community plan. Since then, we've been reviewing it and gone through P&Z. Through that process, there were several amendments that were proposed at the P&Z stage that they approved. So what you got on Friday, you'd previously gotten red lines that reflected those changes. On Friday, you got an update packet that's taken those red lines out and given you what the community plan as approved by the P&Z board. So that's really the base document at this point. And there also are a few red lines that we've created since then in response to some things that staff is doing and also some of the comments from the City Council. One of those was a change to Section 3.6E. We added that. It's under community facilities and deals with transit. That issue came up, and this starts to outline some of the things that we think the plan could do a little bit better to address some of the public transit needs will be in the area. We're looking at a few more of those things, but you might look at that section. It's on page 23 of this new version. It's got page numbers all the way through to see how we've started addressing that issue. But another one that had come up previously by council has to do with sustainability. We've got at your place this evening a modification to, we'll watch page 20. We're now numbering 20.1 because it'll be a change page. There are several things in the community plan currently in Chapter 3 or Section 3 about sustainability. Part of it's labeled living well over time, so you might look at those provisions and standards that they have in there. Under that section, they did have a specific piece labeled sustainability. We've looked at that and thought about some broader needs to address sustainability, so we've worked with them and we've agreed to the modifications that are shown on that page to help better address topics of sustainability. Otherwise, in the document that you got Friday, there are a few changes in Section 7, dealing with a few of the details again that staff had to work on. On Thursday,
oh. Councilmember Summers?
John, I'm just curious, are there any performance measurements, for lack of a better term, that we can say, yep, they hit that sustainability mark 10, 15, 20 years out, or is this just fuzzy language, flowery language? I mean, what's the impact of the language?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, the language that's certainly in 3 is a planning type language. It's aspirational type language of the type of development that they want to hit. There are a few things in there that are a little bit more specific in terms of some of the street and building orientations for best solar, some of the shading requirements, and so forth. Others are, again, a little bit more aspirational in terms of their dedication towards the pedestrian system, the use of alternative vehicles, some of the...
Is that all new language that's been added?
No, most of that's in there.
Most of that's been in there.
Yes.
Some of that, the angles of the streets and what have you, which, for those who haven't heard, that has to do with aligning it with the sun so you could for best energy conservation.
Right.
or use. Those make sense. But what about some of this new language that we got in section 3, page 14?
Right.
That's the one I'm looking at.
Right. That's section 3.4C, the number 5 under that. Again, this is in a portion of the plan document that is a little bit more general, a little bit more aspirational, and not really the specific standards. The document in section 5 under the development unit plan process says that development unit plans have to show us how then they are meeting these standards, or the standards, these goals, these guidelines, these aspirational elements of 3. So that's where we'll be able to get a little bit more specific about exactly then how is the development implementing these ideas and showing us that they will be sustainable.
And we feel this language helps lead into those performance measures, if you will.
Yes, we do. Okay. Unless there's anything else, again, just real quick, Thursday morning at your study session, we'll be receiving a presentation about the master plans. We haven't had that discussion yet. Beth Hewning will be leading that discussion, I believe, and there's several different things with the water and the wastewater and so forth as far as how they're overall master planning that. You'll get an update on that. And then another thing the council has asked for some information on is on job creation. And so I think both staff and DMP are going to be making a presentation on Thursday morning dealing with those topics. In addition to that, then, as far as any further changes, we hope to hear end of this week or next week, then give you really the final version with all the rest of the language we've worked out. We're mostly there. We've got a few things with regard to the master plans, some budget transfers, some of those technical engineering issues that we're working out. Again, we're pretty close and should get you then just one more update with those modifications.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wesley. Ms. Kent, excuse me. We'll dispense with item 3 and go to item 4, Ms. Kent.
Okay. Mayor, Council, Wednesday, September 24th, we have a General and Economic Development Committee meeting at 8 a.m. Thursday, the 25th, study session will be at 7:30. And later that evening, we have a joint Mesa Public Schools City Council meeting at 5:30 at the veranda at Dobson Ranch Golf Course. And then Saturday on the 27th from 9 to 2, we have a National Emergency Preparedness event at the Mesa Riverview Bass Pro Shop. That's it for the week.
Thank you. We have one citizen who wishes to speak to us today, Carol Villard or Villard. I'm sorry if I messed your name up. I messed it up pretty good, or I did pretty good?
The name is Villard. I brought you some petitions tonight asking that the transfer station for the buses that's currently on Third Place near the Mesa Senior Center, that you consider not changing that bus stop. I have two forms of petitions. One is from the people at Christine Place where I live, and it more talks about, you know, the needs that we as handicapped have and how that bus stop helps us. And then the other two sheets are signatures I got of people just getting off the buses or getting onto the buses at that particular stop. And I have 77 signatures. All I did was Thursday and Friday afternoons between the hour 2:30 and 4, which was only an hour and a half both days, I got the 46 signatures from the people getting off and on the buses. So I just thought, you know, this is just a representation. It's not everybody who rides that bus or those buses there. But the transfer station has really opened up the world to those of us who are handicapped and living in Christine Place or in the neighborhood of Christine Place. Because from there, we can get a bus that goes east or west or north or south, and it really opens the world to us, now the whole Phoenix area. And we would really be hard-pressed if all we could get would be the university bus. Some of the residents, you know, are not able to walk very far or have other handicaps that limit them as to the distance that they can go to catch another bus. I know I had heard that there was some kind of a commuter bus or something that was going to go around, but I'm not sure if that's going to connect us to all the buses that we use on a regular basis. I don't care, and I stress that to people that I was talking to, I don't care whether you change the bus routes themselves that go through town. It's just if you leave that transfer station there, where the four buses come in. And if you want to bring more buses, we'd love to see them. But just leave that one transfer station. And like I say, if you don't want to send them around town, that's fine. But at least we would be able to use them. And the people who use them constantly to transfer from bus, to get home from work or to get to work, would have that ability.
Thank you very much. We're going to have Mike James, who's our Director of Transportation, get with you. And I'm sure he can clarify and give you some
Thank
information.
You.
Thank you. I think he might even, Dan is here. He'll take care of it.
Thank you.
That good-looking gentleman right behind you. Oh, look, everyone raised their hand. Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. I knew that would happen.
None of us raised our hand.
Okay, we have a motion. Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are now adjourned, and we will reconvene upstairs and.